I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. And I'm Wesley Sykes. To the other side of the ether is the Spider Ham. To my Spider-Man noir, it's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, Spider Podcaster for Hire.
I was wondering how you were going to do it on this one. I didn't know if you were going to do Spider Fryer, or that doesn't really rhyme, does it?
No, you know what, Nick? I think we need to take that from the top again.
No!
Okay. 3, 2, and welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind, because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. I'm Wesley Sykes. To the other side of the ether is the Spider Ham. To my Spider-Man noir, it's Mr. Nicholas J. Eskfryer, Spider Fryer for Hire.
Yeah, I think that actually does sound better. At least when you say it, it sounds better.
Spider Fryer. Yeah. No, that works. I like that there. So take two. And I actually landed it this time. The last time that we did that. That's all good.
Yes, sir. I am ready, though. I am very excited to talk about this today. I hadn't rewatched this movie in a long ass time. I don't know if it was after, like, when it came out in theaters, or maybe once that I watched it.
Oh, really? This one's a go-to in my staple, my collection here. But if you haven't already guessed by our very unique intro here this week, in honor of its sequel releasing this coming weekend, we'll look back and review 2018 Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, starring Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, and Hailee Steinfeld. Before that, Nick, it's Memorial Day. As a crow flies, as we're recording here, which typically marks the unofficial start of summer. And on Labor Day, it's typically the unofficial end of summer here, but that's when your wedding is here. So we're officially entering not only the summer season, but the wedding season, Nick. So give us all an update. Where are you at here on the nuptials?
Okay. I always feel like we're behind in a way, but every time I talk to other people, whether it's the people that like are helping us or like family and whatever, because obviously in the family just had a wedding last year, I always hear, oh no, you guys are ahead of the game. So that's good. Like, and I don't think that that's like they're lying to us based on like we got the company that we're working with gave us like a nice timeline and everything. And it seems like we're on pace with a lot of stuff, but still like it's just, you know, because you've been through it, like having to plan like this, basically just this big ass party that's so far away and also like kind of serious and important too, like kind of very serious and important.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
you could always get married again.
Jeez. It's like it's not just a party. It's like there's so much more to it. And it's just so like you have that like constant. I don't know about you. I'm curious if you had. I always have this like constant thing in the back of my mind. It's like every day. It's like, is there anything wedding related I have to? Is there anything wedding related? And sometimes there's not, because we are staying ahead of it. But man, it's always like scratching at the back of my head.
No, that voice, that scratch of the back of my head was just my wife reminding me of everything. Everything else inside of the head was completely empty throughout that. You tell me where to go and where I have to be, and I'll be there, and I'll do whatever you need me to do when we get there. But, you know, like as far as keeping tabs and like a list of things, I couldn't do it. But it wasn't until like things like maybe like when we started going for like the fitting and stuff, like that was maybe like 2 months out for all the groomsmen. And like, then you start kind of like getting your events, you got your bachelor party come up. Like that's like when things start kind of kicking up into high gear, because each week gets a little bit shorter because you got another event. So like that time moves a little bit faster as you get to it. But yeah, I think, you know, my sister-in-law is getting married the day after you, right? So they're talking about the invitations and all that now, and like who's going to be coming, and like they're trying to guess, like, do we do an open bar, do we do a limit to an open bar, or just kind of pay up front and then just kind of there's no cutoff, and how they kind of navigate that. And they're trying to like gauge, all right, well, this group is a big drinker, and like I'm not sure if this group are a bunch of big drinkers. You know, is that what's going on in your mind? And then there's a two-part question. Is it going to be an open bar too? Because that's yeah, also important.
Yeah, yeah, that was yeah, of course.
Okay,
that,
all right.
Respectfully, we'll get to, yeah, respectfully, that was one thing that wasn't down my mind. But yeah, like
it should be. I think that's the proper move.
Personally, but to each their own. Everybody's got, like, I know somebody. I had a friend.
We'll pass judgment.
I'm not doing it. So yeah. I'm just trying to be respectful because I have a buddy from high school whose wedding I went to, and he did it for like the cocktail hour and like a little bit into the reception, I think. And then there was like a cutoff time, but like everybody knew about it. So like everybody's got different things going on in life. But when it comes to like things speeding up, looking at July, you know, obviously it's what my bachelor party is. I have that. Lauren's got hers that month. Also, my high school buddy, who is one of my groomsmen, he is also he has his bachelor party that month.
Yeah,
and he's also getting married that month. So it's like, oh boy.
In a blink of an eye, you'll be there. You'll be like 3 weeks away, and you're like, oh man, it's happening.
Yeah. Someone talked to me about doing something in August, like something with work, like a work thing, and I was like on a weekend, and I was like, I appreciate it, and I would normally go, but it's like 2 weeks before the wedding, and I just feel like I'm playing with fire if I do that.
No, yeah, you got to keep yourself open. Yeah,
yeah, like the bar,
like the bar. There we go. I like that. Mm. Top shelf, you know.
Oh yeah, nothing but the best.
What's on the dinner? What's on the meal? Do we know? Is that all settled?
It's going to be buffet style. Yeah. And I'll tell you what. So that's what my brother did. And this is that he used, we're doing different venues, but it's the same company.
Sure.
And there was like a tasting too with the food and everything. And I'll tell you what, between the tasting and the actual wedding that my brother had, like those were the food there, man. Like you won't be disappointed. Like if there's one thing that we know will go over well, it is that.
So this is what I'm a little disappointed to find out, because the sister-in-law also got a food tasting for their venue. And I don't think Jules and I did. Like we were thinking we couldn't remember it. And I was like, we just missed out on like a cornerstone rite of passage for that whole wedding process. Right.
I feel like there's always a tasting. I just didn't like depends on who you're doing, like who you do it with. But I didn't know if it was necessarily tasting for food or tasting for cake. Well, I don't know why I thought that was a thing.
The cake tasting is a real thing, but that's okay. So my stepmother, you know, is in the wedding cake business here. So she was making our wedding cakes. We didn't have a cake tasting because we've tasted the cake so many times that we're like, we knew what we wanted right away. Like you do whatever you want on a design.
Yeah. I'm expecting you to be the biggest dessert critic at the thing. Cause I would have normally had taken you up on having her do our cake, but
if you're in Connecticut, right. You know, that's, that might be outside of her Q zone.
Oh, that's true too. Oh, Q zone. Oh, you just reminded me what we've got coming at us tomorrow.
Oh yeah, that's right. So yeah, you know, let's shift gears real quick here. Huh? How about that? Wait for it.
It's morphin time.
And get over to trending now.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this on Netflix, Nick. This is an on-the-fly trending news because you just we jogged each other's memory here. I Think You Should Leave season 3 trailer came out, and I believe you're right, tomorrow, right? This season.
Yeah, because I think was the I Think You Should Leave memes account, I think is what, or I Think You Should Meme is the
one
account.
Of those. But there, I actually saw some beef between two of the major I Think You Should Leave accounts. They have each other blocked. They don't like each other because one thinks the other is siphoning off followers and like using the other's clout to pick up followers.
Oh wow, I need to check
hanging out in the replies and like posting like maybe better memes, and then like they're hopping over, you know. It's a lot of drama, which is too bad. I Think You Should Leave is supposed to bring people together.
It's only the people who don't get I Think You Should Leave who are supposed to be feeling like they're outsiders.
Right.
That's too bad. I'm actually very interested in checking this out when we get off the show, because I think it's the I think you should meme account. But anyways, I saw them tweeting about, you know, the next season dropping tomorrow, and you know, I would imagine that I'm not alone in like thinking, I hope it lives up to the previous two seasons. You know, it's a lot of pressure. It's like we've talked about. It's for some people, it's not just a community. It's like their personalities. And
right. No, absolutely. And I think, you know, after the success of season 2, I mean, season 1 was great, but that had that kind of niche culty type of feel to it. Then by season 2, it was full blown, you know, top of the pop culture internet charts there. You know, everyone was using it. And you see it now, damn flashes, shirts everywhere, and all that stuff, right? So it's just kind of like woven itself into the fabric of pop culture. So that's a really high bar that it's set now. I think people will enjoy it, but, you know, I'm certainly one of those people who maybe more on the downtrend on it. I can't wait for the season, but I'm hoping not to be disappointed by it.
Yeah, it's I'm surprised that I have this level of nerves. I mean, I'm nervous.
Yeah, it's game seven. You know, it's like
I'm more nervous about this than I am about game seven, which is kind of crazy. But I was reminded though, like, of just how ridiculous. Like, I love the show, but you know, I didn't give it a look at first because like the awkward comedy is like normally not my thing. I get very uncomfortable. And I've gotten past it with this show, but I did see an old like Tim Robinson sketch with Michael Bolton that hashtag dork shared. And I was like, yep, this is, I remember this feeling like, God, he is just so outrageous. And it's not even a 2.5 minute like bit. And I'm just like, I can't watch all of this. I'm too uncomfortable.
Oh yeah. Now I'm certainly excited, but just to kind of like maybe clean up my thought from a moment ago, you know, I just sometimes wonder, you get him. Is he 2-1-0? You know, is Tim Robinson 2-1-0? Is the show 2-1-0? Are you getting too much of the same thing over and over again? And I think that may be what I'm looking for. Maybe a little newness to this. Maybe what little worried me about the trailer is that it seemed like it was kind of living within its own universe there, where it's making callbacks to the first season. They're bringing back some of the beloved characters. I think it's great, but I think there's a line to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely don't want to go over the top with something like that, but they didn't do that in the second season. So this is definitely, to me, it's a safe time to do it, but don't go over the top. But when you talk about one note, I don't necessarily look at Tim Robinson and think that, but when you talk about the show, I do see your point, because I feel like I've heard this elsewhere where it's like sketches that don't have him in it generally aren't as beloved. I feel like,
yeah.
Is it Crashmore? Maybe that's the most popular one, like that doesn't have him in it.
He's a bad guy.
He is not in that one.
He's not in that one, but I'm not sure how beloved that is. But that one,
that's an easy one to quote. I mean, the credit card roulette. I'm not like,
and then or the girls going out to brunch in season one, right?
Yep.
Hanging out with all my dipshit pig fat friends, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So
Some hit, but I agree with that too. I think I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few, but I feel like the Instagram one you're talking about, I think that was season one, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Yeah, I think that might have been episode one, season one.
Okay. Sunday fun day with these pig dicks.
There we go. That's it. Yeah.
So ridiculous. It's nerves, but I am ready to get on that shit right away, because we talk about like not watching a Marvel show and not being able, or a movie not being able to go on Twitter. I got to imagine this could be really hard tomorrow.
I wonder if I think you should meme accounts get like an early screening, like the Marvel scoop, you know, so they can get all the memes ready by Wednesday, Thursday.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. I wonder how Twitter gets them like into the lexicon. Cause you know, you have like the auto prompted.
Yeah.
How do the GIFs work in there? But anyways.
The team of GIF generators, like, that's a fun room to be in.
I would imagine, yeah.
Man, that'll be a good time. That's a good job. Career advice out there for the CMM listeners.
Yes, go to college for that. Yeah,
go to Meme University. Switching gears here. We're going to stay on the internet.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
I found this on Twitter from @ Can We Get Some Toast. So, it's their birthday as a crow flies today. So they've been sharing. It's a scooper, a Marvel and DC scooper that we have on Twitter here. So they've been sharing all these scoops in honor of their birthday. So we'll just kind of scroll through and see if anything jumps your mind, Nick, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure. Like we can, there's one in particular that I've seen in this that before we even broach the subject. Let's go through whatever ones you want to go through first. Sorry.
Well, the first one here is the Children's Crusade will be Billy's quest for his brother Tommy with some help from an unlikely guide.
Interesting.
Okay. So I don't know what that is. Okay. This one here, I like this. I like this name here. Vin and Vivian Vision will make their MCU debut in Vision Quest.
Yeah, so these two characters were in, I think it was called The Visions, which was like the Tom King wrote a Vision story, and it was smashing. I think Joe talked about it on TLDR, if I'm not mistaken. Definitely, like, that was like one of his more popular and better received works. And Tom King, obviously, you know, mostly known for writing Batman, but yeah, that's an interesting series. I think these are from the pages of that
one of the comic book panels there. Yeah, it looks pretty cool. Now, it hurts me because for everyone who loved WandaVision and the family that was there, this seems like Vision just left a family and then up and started a new one and got some new kids. You know, he just up and left. He's like, I'm going to go out and get a carton of milk and a pack of smokes. I'll be back. And then just like started a new robot family.
Yeah, but
Wanda goes out of crazy. The kid, like, she loses the kids to like Child Protective Services, you know, like now she's trying to get them back.
Some would argue, though, that Wanda never had the kids. I feel like we've had that debate here before.
Absolutely. No, you're right. You're right.
But like with this is like in the MCU, in Marvel Comics, it was for a different reason than the MCU. But to me, it still fits either way, where like Wanda went too far and Vision can't forgive it, can't move past it. I mean, there's a whole nother layer in there with, you know, the stone and everything that we learned throughout WandaVision.
Right. Okay. So moving forward here, this might be the one that caught your attention earlier. This one went viral here, almost 2,000 likes, 245 retweets, 185 comments. There are two other cast members returning for Deadpool 3. One from the Fox X-Men movies, and then one from the MCU. They're villains, and you would never guess who. So, I like that. That's a little rhyme right there.
Yeah, fine. But
I've been reading a lot of Dr. Seuss lately, so that's kind of like in my mind.
Oh, wow, okay. But I saw this one, Wes, and I was legitimately like, what the fuck? Like, I don't need to know that going in. Like, if they want to put it in the trailers and stuff like that, to me, the entertainment industry scooping has gone to another level with the Marvel movies and DC and everything. It's like, you know, with like sports and stuff, I kind of get it. And I mean, at the same time, you could even argue, oh, it like tears down teams at times when reports get out there. But for this, it's like, we're talking about stories. If the people who want to tell these stories want this information out there beforehand, then that's fine. And I'm talking about like, you know, like if this is like a producer or assistant who's given this information away to these scoopers, like that you're not one of the storytellers. Like you're working your way in and shit. Like if the people, the top five people in charge of putting this story together want to do that, fine. But other than that, man, what the fuck? Like it's just I know you have liked this stuff in the past, but I just can't stand it.
I love all the scoops. I love finding all the details and stuff. And I think there is a place for it, but I agree with you. It has grown into its own type of industry in and of itself. Right. And part of me thinks some of these people may even be, you know, paid by the studios as like guerrilla marketing campaigns to keep, you know, Marvel, DC, whatever, in the news cycle and in the ever evolving 24-hour news cycle, to keep them relevant in between projects. So that could be interesting. That's my conspiratorial mind
kind of
turning some gears there. But generally, this can we get some scoop? And I think My Time to Shine, hello, we've mentioned that person, that account a few times. They're pretty good. They're pretty spot on. So, you know, I can understand the people who don't want to be spoiled, not wanting to be spoiled. But
yes, but yeah, I agree with you.
Do you remember this, though? You might not. We're talking about it at length now. But, you know, if you were to just scroll through like you did earlier and then you kind of tucked it back in the recesses of your brain, never thought about it until Deadpool 3 comes out again, you know, maybe it doesn't hold on to it the same way.
Bury it deep down inside and never bring it up again. but yeah, I'm blanking on the other account that you brought up.
My Time to Shine.
My Time to Shine. I will give them credit. My Time. I can we get some toast is new to me, but My Time to Shine, like that account does a like.
I think they're in cahoots together. They could be the same person for all I know.
I will give them that credit. Like they do a great job. Like this is not a like it, that's the problem. That's kind of what annoys me. But I will say like if to me, if we didn't do this show, like I would probably mute those accounts or something to that effect. So that way I just don't accidentally
just don't get spoiled. Sure. It's
nothing against them. Like they do a good job, but just
shots fired. I hear you.
I don't want to know. Yeah, exactly. There we go. I'm trying to start.
We're all reading between the lines right now, Nick. I hear you.
There we go. Yes. Super jealous.
Yeah. Okay. So let's do one more here. This is also about Deadpool 3. So this is right up your alley. I won't trigger you anymore.
I missed this.
Hugh Jackman's Wolverine won't be the only X-Man returning in Deadpool 3. Halle Berry, Famke Janssen, and James Marsden will also reprise their roles as Storm, Jean Grey, and Cyclops, respectively.
I feel like I had heard about the Halle Berry stuff already.
Ooh, okay.
So that's surprising. Like, I thought I saw that elsewhere. But yeah, to see Famke and Marsden in the mix, okay. Like, that's like, I'm a little less annoyed about that, I guess, because I feel like that would probably be, I don't know. I feel like if this is out there, they got to be in it, like, not maybe not prominently, but like not just like a cameo and that's it, you know?
Right.
With the other ones, I wonder if it's a cameo. It's like, let me just experience the cameo. I don't need to hear about that beforehand. If these people are going to be in the mix, like as like supporting side characters who have a few scenes, it's just it's a little less annoying, but still like surprising. Didn't see that coming.
I want to circle back to what was actually said in the X-Men villains there too. So before moving forward there are two villains, one from the Fox X-Men movies and the other from the MCU. Do you have any thoughts?
I mean, I would love it to be, for the X-Men one. I don't know about the MCU necessarily, but for the X-Men one, I'd love for it to be Ian McKellen's Magneto. That would be really cool.
Okay. Well, what if it was Apocalypse?
Huh.
Because doesn't he have to do with like time traveling and the gods and everything like that? Like my first thought was like Kang and Apocalypse.
Yeah, I mean that would
Ramatut and all that kind of stuff, right?
That would be interesting to have him in the mix in a Deadpool movie when it's like every time Apocalypse is around, it's like super high stakes, and then you're gonna have Deadpool like
dealing with
that.
Because we know the TVA Mobius is going to be involved, right? So my thought process was that it was going to, you know, Kang would be kind of an obvious insert.
Mm-hmm. What with you have another layer too with Apocalypse, though, because that is played by Oscar Isaac,
right?
Moon Knight.
Yeah.
And is also Spider-Man 2099.
That's right. Oh man, so he could be getting the trifecta here.
Yes, it could get like they could turn him into the Spider-Man meme without like his mask on. It could get very weird, but I'd love to see Magneto. I think it would make a lot of sense if you want to have Ian McKellen get into the MCU, because obviously he's getting older, so like this is an easy way to kind of sneak him in, and it would be like, I think, similar to Patrick Stewart, like it would make sense.
A nice send off there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's stay with trending now here.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
I think I found this on Twitter here. There was a link there of Andy Muschietti, who is the director of The Flash, on whether he would direct the upcoming James Gunn Batman movie, The Brave and the Bold. And he replied, "I don't think I can talk to that yet."
Ooh.
A little bit of intrigue there. So the question is, Nick, do you think he's going to direct the movie? And do you think he deserves it? I mean, we haven't seen The Flash yet, you know?
I think he's going to be heavily involved, at least, based on what he's saying. Like, is he going to direct I don't know, but it could be maybe a producer or something to that end. But to me, like, James Gunn's already seen The Flash, and I very much trust James Gunn's judgment on what makes a good superhero movie. He's, like, made
some of the best ones. Yeah.
He's made four good superhero movies. And like, I would say, like, I really like Guardians 2. But I would say he made three great ones. I think the Suicide Squad is a great one. I think the Guardians 3 is a great one. Mm-hmm. And then I think Guardians 2 is good. And obviously Guardians 1 is one of the best.
It's all time. Up there. Yeah.
So it's like, so I do trust his judgment. And also like The Flash, he wasn't involved in that originally. I don't know how much like of a hand he had, like, before it was like done, but to say like, so he doesn't, I don't know if he knew Andy before that, but like I would, based on him just coming in later, he has no reason to want to bring that guy back in, but now he seemingly is, like, that's
I'm holding out hope. I'm reserving until I see the movie here, because you know, as much as every actor in Hollywood has tweeted out something about how great The Flash is, again, it might be another guerrilla marketing campaign. They're all kind of saying the same thing. I don't usually like comic book movies, but this one was great. You know, so I'm a little bit skeptical of that. But you know, there's also been some non-spoiler reviews floating around on Twitter, saying that it's like a great story or a great fan service, and there's all these great Easter eggs and cameos and nods to the DC lore, but the story itself is not really cohesive. So it's like, you know, I wonder if that works for, if that, you know, does that really make up? Maybe it's like a No Way Home situation where, you know, a lot of people had problems with the story, myself included, but the overarching fan service that was delivered of getting all three Spider-Men on screen and their ability to interact with each other really, really kind of like, you know, washed out any story problems, at least for me.
That's interesting. I mean, Flash, it has definitely a tall task to handle just because of how much of a mess DC has been on the big screen. And then the story that they are utilizing as Flashpoint, which like for comic book readers is a very important.
Right. Benchmark. Sure.
Exactly. Very important story. Never mind for Flash, like not just Flash fans, but all comic book readers. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious how, if that's the case where it's like they didn't do the story all that well, I'm very curious how I'm going to feel about it, because like, I haven't, it's been a little while since I rewatched No Way Home, but I absolutely freaking loved it. It's one of my favorite. I think it's my favorite MCU movie that isn't Endgame or Infinity War. And just because like all the different stuff, like all the nostalgia and everything they played to, and I thought it, when it worked in the story, like had a flow. If you felt that one didn't, and then we're hearing about this one that it like Flash might not, maybe even less so. I feel like I'm going to have a harder time forgiving that.
Yeah, we'll see. I think that comes out as a crow flies 2 weeks from now. So I think not. So after we review Spider-Man Across the Universe or Spider-Verse, we'll review The Flash there. So that'll be something fun to look forward to. June's going to be a jam-packed month. Those weekends are just whittling away on you, Nick.
Oh, yeah. But hey, to see a movie, especially comic book movies, I don't give a shit. That's not taken away from my weekends.
That's true. That's a good point here. Last one with trending now before moving into the comic book minute.
Damn, son, where'd you find this?
Found this in Men's Health magazine. Nick, Arnold Schwarzenegger says he would love to join the MCU if he was offered the right role. What is that right role, in your opinion?
I mean, first of all, this is a good question. But when I was thinking about it, like I saw some of these like Omega, like big time characters and everything, and I'm like, yeah, these would be really cool. But I'm thinking like Arnold's old. Like, how much can you really invest in him safely where he'll be around? Like, you'll have that character around for X amount of years, and Arnold's going to be like okay to continue acting for that long, and blah blah blah. And also, like, is he the best actor ever? No. So there's also that. But for me, like, a cheap, easy way to get him in the mix that would be fun. We got all this multiverse stuff going on right now. Mm-hmm. Have him play the Hulk. Like, you can easily do that, and don't have him CGI'd up. Like, try and like, well, maybe a little bit of CGI, but try and make it.
What's the King Hulk? What's like the Master Hulk there?
World War Hulk.
Yeah. Is that like there's like a big Hulk there, right?
You could have him be one of the Hulks whenever they end up doing that movie. That would be great.
We'll see. And I liked your point here, but just to do a variation of it is when after William Hurt died, cast him as the Red Hulk, because we know that he's going to be, you know, in a presidential kind of government type of feel. He's already hulked out in real life. You wouldn't need to do too much CGI to him. Then he also has that polishness of a former senator, former governor, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And he's got the Kennedy connection. So he's got all that kind of like, polished politician type of framework already built in.
I just don't like him as much as an actor, though. Like Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
Harrison
Ford is like a ghost at this point.
Sure. Yeah, but I guess my thing is that I trust the ghost of Harrison Ford more than I trust whatever Arnold is now. But I think the whole like your spin on what I was going with, like having him, like when you do the like the Planet Hulk or World War Hulk, whatever it is that Casey reported a while back, like have him be in the mix. That could be fun.
All right. I like that here. Let's shift gears over to the comic book.
It's Morphin time.
Okay. So
wait.
Ah, a superb choice.
Clear.
I forgot. Thank you very much. Very light week in terms of comics this week. Like, I think there's just like a trade coming out from Boom. I don't think AWA has anything coming out. DC's just like a couple of one-shot stuff. But over at Image, we do have the second issue of Deep Cuts. Then there's also The Scorched, issue 18. And then a book that I haven't gotten to read yet because I think Marvel didn't send it over because of Memorial Day yet, but Punisher, issue 12. This is the finale for Jason Aaron's run, and it has been a next-level series. I think, you know, Joe and I, we have – you know, different types of episodes that we do. But one thing we haven't done really is talk about a book that we both read from like start to finish. We tend to just talk about books that the other person hasn't read unless it's in what's new. But I think Punisher is going to be one of those books where we may do that differently and devote an episode to that, because it's just been that cool and that interesting of experience in a series that had some blowback when it first started too, because of the logo change. Mm-hmm. And I hate that the idea of like people missing out on this run just because of that like publicity that surrounded it initially. But we'll be talking about.
Yeah. Oh, because they had to change it because of all the political stuff with it, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So they made that choice. But then the choice, the logo they went with looked cool. And then it also very much went with the story. So I don't know mm-hmm. what they're going to do after this series as far as this logo, but. Also, there's a whole lot going on. Like, I don't know what the future of the Punisher holds, you know, until like the remember what happened in issue 11. So that has been a must-read series. If you haven't checked it out, get that first trade. Don't wait around for us to do an episode on. As for TLDR this week, we're doing What's New, which usually means we have something planned. But as always, I don't tell you guys until we have it recorded. But we did talk to Matt Groom last week, who is has written Mighty Morphin Power Rangers arc before and is currently writing Inferno Girl Red, which is part of the Masterverse. So something to go listen to, check out. It was another fun conversation and getting some insight into some crazy things that have happened in the Masterverse recently.
Matt Groom with the groom to be. Very interesting. Interesting stuff there.
Look at you.
I still got it every now and again here. Shifting gears.
It's Morphin time.
Over to the main topic here for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, an exit survey. All right. Why don't you hit us with the synopsis, Nick?
Teen Miles Morales becomes the Spider-Man of the universe and must join with five spider-powered individuals from other dimensions to stop a threat to all realities. I'll tell you what, the first half of that synopsis, it's kind of clunky.
Yeah, becomes a Spider-Man. I must join with. I'm not a teen. I'm not a big fan. Not a big fan of the IMDb here. Thumbs down.
There we go.
This is written by Phil Lord and Rodney Rothman. That's two thumbs up on that name. I like that name, Rodney Rothman. Kind of sounds like maybe a safety or something in the NFL, right?
Oh yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, maybe like a hard-hitting in-the-box safety there. Directed by Bob Parrishetti, Peter Ramsey, and the starting in-the-box safety for the Spider-Verse, Rodney Rothman. Starring Shameik Moore as Miles Morales, Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker, Haley Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, Mahershala Ali as Uncle Aaron or Prowler, Brian Tyree Henry as Jefferson Davis, Lily Tomlin as Aunt May, Luna Lauren Velez as Rio Morales, Zoe Kravitz as Mary Jane, John Mulaney as Spider-Ham, Kimiko Glenn as Penny Parker, Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man Noir, Catherine Hahn as Doc Ock, Liev Schreiber as Wilson Fisk, and Chris Pine as the blonde Peter Parker. Star-studded cast.
Yeah, there was Catherine Hahn was one that surprised me this time around. Like I looked it up, but I did not know that was Liev Schreiber. And think you said Spider-Man Noir's name wrong. I think it's a little bit longer than how you pronounce it.
What did I say?
Yeah, fucking Cage.
That's right.
Yeah.
I thought I really said it wrong because there was a couple times in there. I was like, I'm not really sure.
No, I think
But Haley Steinfeld, you know, I completely forgot that she was Gwen Stacy, Brian Tyree Henry, Mahershala Ali, Lily Tomlin is Aunt May. I mean, they really like pulled out all the stops here. And if we could turn back the clocks a little bit, I don't think there was that much hype from this movie.
Going in, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there was
fair. Another Sony Spider-Man movie that's animated. Yep. Like, who's this for? And then like they really pulled out all. They got a great single to market it behind there that we just played a little snippet of. And then as you heard with this cast, really like everyone on there. I mean, Chris Pine plays probably has like, you know, 20 lines in it, and it all comes in the 5 minutes there, and then he's gone. But
yeah, and it's well, we'll talk a little more multiversal stuff a little bit later, because there are some unanswerable questions, or maybe answerable, who knows, but they're unanswerable now at least. As for the box office reception, this brought in $375.5 million worldwide, including $190 domestic and $35 million in the domestic opening for this movie. Received a 8.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 97-93 split on Rotten Tomatoes. Kind of surprised that the critics have this a little bit higher than the audience. But not surprised by the 97 grade necessarily. A 4.8 out of 5 on Google reviews, with only 84% of Google users liking this movie.
I don't understand the Google user metric here. I bet it's binary, but this doesn't make any, if it's binary, then what is that? 16% of people who didn't like this movie.
Yeah. And how does it get a 4.8 out of 5?
Right. Yeah. Very weird.
Doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm honestly, like, I know IMDb has been a little, personally, I felt a little weird about IMDb's grading system recently, but like 8.4.
What? Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's true. That actually falls in line with Google users, right?
Yeah,
averages out to the same thing. Doesn't really make that much sense to me, but no. I guess 8.4 out of 10 sounds better than 84%.
Yes,
maybe that's a little trick of the mind there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, you know, while all these crazy algorithms we can't really get a handle on, you can always get a handle on our metrics for rating here. It's very it might sound complex at first, but it's really just on a 100-point scale. So Nick, why don't you hit us with our score and tweet length review?
Okay. I'll lead us off then. So I gave this a 97 out of 100, all time top 5 comic book movie without question. The animation is absolutely mind blowing. Mm-hmm. When you talk about like the little things that make a movie great, the detail the animation team had during like the in-between moments of this movie, absolutely remarkable. And that all comes on top of the fact that this is like a fun time all around. Great, just a great movie in general, but it just elevated to that next level because of that remarkable attention to detail.
Yeah, Nick, sometimes we're on the same block. Sometimes we're next door neighbors. Sometimes we're bunk bed roommates. But today, I think we're soaking, you know, we're talking, if you will. It's almost Pride Month here, so maybe that's appropriate terminology. But because I gave it also a 97 out of 100. A delightful movie upon every rewatch. I think it just... nothing really ages poorly about this. It has heart, action, comedic relief, representation from everyone. You know, I think whether you see yourself or even see like a personality of someone there, I think what's great about some of those like high school drama movies, like Dazed and Confused, dramedy type movies or something, or Breakfast Club, is like everyone knows someone that's that character from their high school. And I think that's kind of the case here with all the different Spider-Man and all the different characters that come up. The unique animation is really a game changer and just tells a great Spider-Man story. So this might be the best comic book movie to date, depending on who you ask.
I think that is a fair debate to be had, honestly.
Yeah, and we might have it, actually, because as we get to the exit survey here, how does this movie compare on rewatch to viewing it for the first time?
Just as good as I remember it. Like, it's been, like I said, it's been a while, and I feel like there are, like, I mean, little things like, you know, realizing it was Catherine Hahn voicing Doc Ock, like all like stuff that I just didn't remember. But yeah, it was outstanding.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this has big time staying power. It's very reliable to watch like every couple of months, in my opinion, if it's like on a streaming service, which I think it was on Netflix for a while, then maybe HBO Max. But now they're, you know, marketing off of it, you capitalizing on it, make it a video on demand. But yeah, at any rate, you know, I think that's like a nice movie to fall asleep to. It's almost like The Office or Parks and Rec for me, where it's like I don't really have to watch it. It's just nice kind of background noise or background viewing, because like the animation experience, the visual experience is so good.
That's interesting. I did not know you felt that way about
it. I think I realized it upon watching it again. It's like, I've seen this movie a good amount of times, and I like it. Like, I gotta quit lying to myself here. I just gotta tell the world.
Yeah. There you go. It really is that freaking good, though. Like, it's one of the best. There's no two ways. It's just like, and it's not, it's beyond the genre, I think, too. And what makes it so special, too, is like, it's animation. Most people, that's going to turn them off, and doesn't matter with this one.
Well, you think about, you know, and I know it's not the exact same medium, but the MCU's first foray into animation with What If and how that was so poorly received that it was like, is this a part of the universe? Is it not? And then now, like, people are looking at ways to rope the Spider-Man universe into the real life Sony universe or the real life MCU or whatever, you know, so it's kind of interesting like that. But let's have this debate right now. Is this the best Spider-Man movie to date? And follow up question. Is it the best comic book movie overall?
I don't think there's a debate about if it's the best Spider-Man movie to date. It is the best Spider-Man movie to date.
I think No Way Home makes a good argument for it. But again, a lot of No Way Home is just Across the Spider-Verse and live action in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's got something special to it for sure. Like the No Way Home, but this is just. It relies on so much stuff previous to the movie, where when you're comparing the two, to me, it's not even a discussion just because of that alone.
Yeah. And this might be a top three, top four. I like your Mount Rushmore. I never heard that before. I think it could be in the Mount Rushmore, maybe top five, but it's up there as great as comic. I think you talk about, you know, your Logans, your Endgames, your Infinity Wars, like you mentioned there, Nick, but also maybe, I don't know, Winter Soldier, maybe Guardians of the Galaxy. I think those are all kind of like within the conversation there.
Yeah, well, I whenever we talk about these rewatches of a movie that maybe we haven't seen in a while, discussed in a while, whatever, I tend to go back to that list that we did for Dork, which was, I think, our top 50 comic book movies of all time. Mm-hmm. I knew this was in my top five. I just wasn't certain exactly where I had it. I knew I had Infinity War and Endgame ahead of it. And then Logan was the one that I'd forgotten for sure. I knew that was top five as well, but to me, I don't think it's up for debate with this one though. I think with those four, like, you can mix and match where you have those in your conversation. I don't think it's deniable or it's undeniable that like those are at least top 10 for everybody who liked the genre.
Yeah, and this is in the conversation. I think, you know, it's always like, you know, who's your top five in the NBA? And it can really, you know, it's all the same players, but it's really the ordering that kind of differentiates from people, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So, all right, great. So what was the most rewatchable scene of this movie?
You know what's crazy is that friggin' shot of him jumping off the skyscraper and, like, the glass shattering and everything. Like, we talk about this constantly, how, like, if the best stuff from that movie was in the trailer, usually that's not a good sign.
Right. Yep.
This is one of those few exceptions where it's like, this is just so good. It's fine. And there's a little bit more to it that we don't get in the trailer too. Like I've based on my memory, it's been so long, but that shot is just like, it's everything. Like that, it's like a great encapsulation of everything that this movie brings to you. And it's still like one of the, like, I watch it now and it's just like, it's just so cool. And the music and everything.
And the upside down. Yeah. I mean, that's what I have in here. I think we're talking about the same thing, but it's the, what's up danger, scene of it all. Right. So it's like right after he's like fully realized all of his powers, he's just had that, like that great moment with his father after, you know, Uncle Aaron died and he's feeling like he's drifting away from Miles and he's trying to go talk to him through the dorm room door. And that's really another great watchable scene, just the dynamic between his father and Miles there, Jefferson and Miles, and kind of see their relationship. I thought they really got that well, about maybe the struggles of drifting away from your teenage son and then wanting to kind of still be there, but you want to let him out and kind of be on his own too. So all that kind of problems kind of coming through there, what ultimately amounts to the great, you know, great power comes great responsibility equivalent. You know, that's kind of what gives Miles Morales that confidence to go jump off, you know, that big skyscraper and then get all his powers and kind of get the full use of them. So I think all of that is really great. You know, in like a 5 or 10 minute scene, you know, I think that's probably like one of the top scenes overall, but all of the Spider-Man introductions are amazing. And that's a nice little callback joke. And like, you know, one of the great keys to comedy is repetition, right? So
sure. Yeah.
It works there.
It does. That is another good one. Spider-Ham is, I fucking love him. We'll talk about that more later, but, yeah. let's see what else I got. Oh, Spider-Gwen entering the mix. Like her, like not just, I know you're talking about the intros, but like her for like when we first see her get involved in the action as Peter B. Parker and Miles are running away from Doc Ock. I mean, that all right, of that was good too.
There, yeah.
That was cool. But in general, Wes, like the thing about this movie that like what's like why it's also another reason why it's so like awesome. There are movies where they're really good movies, but like I'm itching for like a certain scene. I'm ready to get past this certain point. Like it's rewatch. Like I remember this, you know, okay. And like, I'm trying to,
there's
certain spots that I want to get to. I was just thinking about this now as you were kind of going through some of your picks, like never in this movie do I think that at all. Like it's,
no, and I think the animation has a big part of that. Cause it's, it is just so visually pleasing to the eye that it just like you stay glued to the screen.
Yeah. 100%. That is a great point. Like it's, they make everything, every second of this thing count. I mean like the, when Miles is doing the graffiti with Uncle Aaron, like even that was really cool. I mean, them jumping over the fence, like it's just a little thing, but it's like, it's funny. Like, so all of it. I mean, the final battle also is the other one that I just want to point out as well. Like that was very well done too. Super trippy. But they did a really good job with that too.
You know, I loved it. I loved it too. And again, getting an emotional response out of you, making you emotionally invested in the relationship between Miles and Peter B. Parker, Miles and his father, and all that Miles and Gwen, you feel that connection, albeit through an animated lens, which I think is tougher to do than having like live action there. So
100%.
Kudos to them. Who was your favorite Spider character?
I mean, the main three characters are, it's like a kind of an equal playing field for me. I probably put Peter B. Parker at number three for me.
Number three
for me. I like Miles. I love his look. Like especially when he's got the hoodie going and everything.
Yeah.
It's unique. And for me too, like sometimes when you're that new character trying to, and you're going through an origin story, it's not always easy to kind of, we've talked about before how just origin stories can be like formulaic and not great. And then the main character, you like them for some of the things they do, but it takes a second for them to become who we know them as. Mm-hmm. Like Miles is just Miles from the jump, and he gets a little bit of confidence, but like this is just who that kid is. So I had an appreciation for that. And then Gwen too. I mean, she's a badass and she's very agile too. Like she's got a talk about cool look. The two of them, man. I know everybody loves the classic Spider-Man look, and I do too. But those two, like. Whoever designed those years ago.
No, those are great suits for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's those two. And then Spider-Ham bringing up the rear for me.
So I got Peter B. Parker, number one. I think he's, that schlubby middle-aged guy that I can relate to. You know, he's like not really in shape, but he's not really fat either. You know, he's like, he's kind of both. I think I said the same thing there. He's kind of in shape, but he's kind of fat at the same time. He's schlubby. He's wearing sweatpants, you know, like. That's an all-time Halloween costume. You know, just pull out the Spider-Man costume and then throw in some sweats and then you're good. You know, that's it there. So
that's a great call.
I like that self-deprecating. Jake Johnson played that perfectly or voiced that perfectly there. So you can really see him being that Peter B. Parker through the animation there, through his voice work. So I love that. Spider-Man Noir with Nick fucking Cage.
There you go.
Nailed it that time.
Nice.
Is great too. Again, way over the top, and to play that like LA Confidential like noir voice was very, very cool too. I love that. it's all good stuff there. Miles was awesome too. Miles and Gwen, I got no beef with them, but those were probably my top two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a character that I thought was poorly done in this movie.
No. Everyone comes out great. Kind of like what we talked about with Dungeons and Dragons last week. It's a very likable group overall, and everyone kind of pulls their own weight very well. And then all the side characters become very lovable and attached to, again, with like the family aspects of that. So, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I had this one blank because I almost removed the question from the exit server, but you have a good question here for unanswerable questions.
Well, there's the natural question of, is it possible for the sequel to match this one in terms of staying power and overall fan appreciation?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but like that's just a basic question. I think the more interesting one is, unless you wanted to say something on that.
No, I think that's a fair question. And again, it's tough. It's kind of like what we were talking about with I Think You Should Leave. It's like, are we going to get more of the same, or is this going to kind of advance it in a different, cool way?
Yeah.
I think that's a fair question to have.
But the better question to have is, by making everything so multiverse driven, will Sony and Marvel bring this cast of characters into the MCU throughout MCU's multiverse saga?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you got to leave it on the table for Secret Wars. I think that certainly brings into it. And with the way No Way Home ended with the Venom and then the Mobius crossover, who knows? You know, like, I don't know what's going on in the minds of Sony and Marvel when it comes to Spider-Man use. So I would say everything is possible.
Yeah.
Anything is possible. It's game seven.
Oh, look at you. If I'm curious your answer to this too, Wes, like who, if they were considering doing that, which characters would you want to do that? And I would think you'd bring the actors in still, but you couldn't do it like we're getting Spider-Man 2099 brought in the mix. I don't think you could do it with him, but I do think like Jake Johnson, like taking on,
I would love that. And Haley Steinfeld, Gwen Stacy, like that's would be really cool to see.
That's a tough one because she's Kate Bishop.
Oh, that's right. Oh yeah, yes. that's a good point. But it's, I don't know, maybe if it is a what is going to say, like a Secret Wars type of thing. I don't know. I'm gonna cast her twice. Who cares? Throw a blonde wig on her.
This is true. Like if you're talking like bring her
double
first,
the rate.
I guess I was looking. You got to make sure you give her a quote, Wes.
Yeah, least. Meet her quote. Double it.
Yeah. Oh wow. Then it's gonna be a problem. But I would have like, if you're talking about having them come into the mix for like one movie and then that's it. Then I could see them doing that. I guess I was kind of looking at it more like long haul. This is the way you could bring these characters into the MCU, because then I'm thinking like I think Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, like you definitely can do it with those two. You could have done it with Spider-Gwen and Haley Steinfeld. You just might have to recast her when she gets into the MCU.
So Shameik Moore, his voice works perfectly, but on his, at least his headshot for IMDb, he looked a little bit older. You know, obviously like Miles Morales is like what, a freshman or sophomore in high school? Like he's just hitting puberty. I'm not sure if that would work. The voice, again, is perfect for it, but
28. You'd have to just
age him up or move it further in the timeline.
Exactly. That's that. I mean, and you could do that, but that's the thing you'd have to do. But my thing is like I'd want to give those actors like first crack at it since they were.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely. Kind of like The Last of Us did with the game, right? They got all the voice actors from the game in there. So
yes,
cool stuff. All right, so what will age the best from this movie aside from this movie itself?
To me, like, well, the execution of like the spider characters was huge. I mean, there's so many things you can talk about with this movie and say it's good, but with that, especially the main three characters, I just like I said before, I love all of them. Like, which one's your favorite? I would be happy to see a movie on either one of those separately. I would absolutely give those a look, without hesitation. But to me, it's not even close. It's the animation that will age best from this movie. To me, Wes, and I wanted to say this earlier, we were talking about the animation. Like, we've had some actors recently, right? And there's actors and actresses, maybe directors, producers, whatever, where if they're involved in a project, like people are going to be interested in giving that a look. I checked the credits, but I didn't jot any of the names down. But like this animation team, if the key players, if they're involved in another animated thing, like I'll know visually, but I want to see that, whatever it is.
Yeah. No, I'm with you too. And just to go one, that comic panel style specifically of the animation, and then how they also worked in the use of the real comics, like into the story, like when Miles Morales, again, finally gains his confidence and full use of his powers, you get to the cover, you get a cover page of the Miles Morales Spider-Man, or, you know, when he's going through his process of actually getting bit by the spider and going through that transformation, he's reading the Spider-Man comic of Peter going through that transformation at the same time. I thought that was pretty cool that he's like, again, reading the comics and he's a fan of the Spider-Man stuff as well. So I'm there with that as well. Just pulling off a multiversal story effectively. 2018, this was pre-Endgame. Right?
I think it's post-Endgame.
I think it might have been right around the same time. But nevertheless, Endgame, that was just introducing the multiversal story. And then we get more kind of delving into it after. But I think this really pulled it off well, and it kind of set the benchmark for like, all right, this is what we can do here, even in a live action platform.
Sorry, I'm trying to check out the release dates.
Okay, I'll keep going here. I can fill the air. I'm filled with it. All the meta jokes about Spider-Man in the opening, the emo dancing from Spider-Man 3, the animated theme song, the crappy ice cream treat from the ice cream man, you know. So all that stuff. I like that self-awareness that they showed, especially early on.
You know, you mentioned the emo Spidey dancing. As I'm watching, I forgot this happened. It's like right at the beginning. That's when, like, when you wonder how long it's been since I've seen it. You were correct. Into the Spider-Verse came out before Endgame. Spider-Verse came out in 2018, and then Endgame was early 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, and I feel like this was like the end of 2018, right? Probably around like October, November, something like that, right?
This was, I believe it was December.
December. Okay. Yeah. So like right on the heels, like that was an April release for Endgame. I think so. Yeah. So right on there, but nevertheless, kind of setting the benchmark for how to do a multiversal story and then saying like, oh, this can actually work. Fans will eat this up. So I think that works. The soundtrack, you know, we played the Sunflower song, What's Up Danger. It kind of plays, kind of sets the scene very well, I think. And I think that's it. I think that's all I got. What do you got for me?
For
anything else?
No, for what will age the best. I mean, like, no, you had already jotted down a bunch of notes, and like, it was, I would have just been stealing your stuff if I went first. So no, I agree with everything that you said. Everything.
Oh, beautiful. I love that. Well, we both give it a 97, you know, that's that kind of docking connection that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah. Lauren, whenever we do these rewatches, not always, but like there were some where she wants to rewatch it with me and this was one of them. And she's like, what are you giving that as a grade? And I was like, oh, I mean, I'm going to give it a really high grade. I'm not sure exactly on the number at the moment, but it's like, okay.
What'd she give it a grade?
She has it like at the same range. She might maybe a little bit better than us.
She loved it. Okay. All right.
She like a 98 for her, something like
that. I think you guys get along pretty well. You should think about that.
Yeah. It's something to consider.
You should do something about that. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
What will age the worst from this movie, if anything?
I honestly, Wes, I don't, I feel lame saying this, but I don't have something for you. Like,
no, I'm really with there because it's tough. Like, again, all the corny stuff kind of plays into it because it is like geared towards kids and people of all ages. So like, you know, some of that stuff is excusable. And even like the corny stuff of being like an awkward teenager, like plays, like, I think it works. It's not, it's more, endearing than corny or cringy or anything like that. So I kind of had to rack my brain for this. And my only thing I could think of is, aside from Kingpin's chicken legs and his body proportion, that was a little honorable mention there. I mean, I know he's supposed to be larger than life, but he was a little out of proportion there.
I like that. Cause like that's a comic booky thing to do. Like make him, like, you could never make him look like that in real life. It would
just
never
give him tree trunk legs. I don't got a problem with his girth, but he gets too narrow. he's got barrel chest in, and then like I don't know how you can even like withstand the weight, like the weight distribution. Just even
West doesn't like people with chicken legs. All right, duly noted. You and your
you can't skip leg day. He's skipping leg day. That's what's coming down to.
If there's one thing West is, it's a calf elitist. That's
true.
Fact.
That's true. You know, I call him like I see him here. But the only thing that I could really come up with was introducing the multiversal story to the big screen. So the same thing that it did really well is also kind of hurt it. Because it does kind of give writers and studios an out for everything. And it kind of lessens the stakes to a degree. So, you know, again, getting things sparingly. And then, like, sometimes I feel like Hollywood is like, oh, everyone's in multiverse right now. So we got to do the multiverse thing. And then by the time it goes to production, and then you get through all the final drafts and you get the casting, and then you do all the filming and everything, it's like, we gotten 8 titles already that have come out with multiversal stuff. Now no one cares about it as it's finally in its finished product. So maybe that's it there, you know?
Yeah, no, but I agree with you. Like it's very strange when you look, I remember that as a kid being like, wait, this is out and now this is out. Like, isn't that like the same thing? Like,
yeah,
I have no problem with, I don't mind getting more of a similar thing. Like, Lord knows I've watched plenty of high fantasy and all this other stuff, but in obviously the comic book stuff, but it's just, when it's so similar, do you need to have them together at the same time all the freaking time?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, do we need Deep Impact and Armageddon? Do we need Dante's Peak and what's the other one? And Dante's Peak and Inferno, Volcano, you know, coming out at the same time. You know, it's like, but we get those movies all the time.
Would you, so my question is, and maybe Hollywood, I mean, look, they're Hollywood for a reason, I guess, but like, do you, like, when you hear, okay, I got this one coming out now in April, and then this other one's going to come out in June, it's like the same thing. Are you more likely to see both of those, or are you likely, if they do one and then the next year they do another, like that other movie that's similar? Are you
more likely to see? Yeah, I'll go back. I wouldn't go to the theater to see the same movie twice, you know, unless it's like, again, the superhero stuff is like a little different there.
Sure.
But if it is like a Deep Impact, Armageddon type thing, or like, you know, the Day After Tomorrow and then mm-hmm. Knowing or whatever, you know, all these like end of the world type of movies, like, no, I just, I'll see the one that has the better actors or that looks like the better movie and then go from there.
It's that I tend to agree. So,
Who had the best performance by a side character, Nick? And there's a ton.
Yeah, there are a lot. I know who one of your favorite spider characters were, so I'm not going to be talking about him necessarily, but Spider-Ham. It's just,
of course. Oh, he's great. John Mulaney, again, perfect casting, voice casting for that.
Another one where, I mean, I have no idea how the hell they would bring him into the MCU, but like, unless it was the What If stuff, but I'd be very interested in seeing John Mulaney, Spider-Ham thrown in the mix. Peter Porker, I mean, come on.
There is a tear in the current multiverse that he slides through and then gets captured or saved by the new Guardians of the Galaxy, so that you can have Spider-Man and Cosmo the Space Dog and Rocket Raccoon and Groot and all this stuff right together. So it's all kind of ragtag mix there, and he's helping out.
I love that idea. I more meant, how do you feel about, like, I don't know how they could do it visually. Like,
that would be tough there
too. Yeah, I mean, he's in the spider suit, so it probably works. It could be a little bit easier, but that's the part. But the other one for me is Doc Ock. I mean, and mm-hmm. also, like, Catherine Hahn. I mean, I love Catherine Hahn.
All-timer, yeah.
Yes, I have a very soft spot for her, and she kills it here. She's absolutely great, and it's just out of nowhere. It's like, oh, wait, you're fucking Doc Ock? Like, this universe is Doc Ock?
And it's a good reveal, too. You know, something mm-hmm. that doesn't age very well upon rewatch is that reveal. Unless you forget about it, right? Because you think she's just a scientist helping out Wilson Fisk, and then you're like, oh, no, she is the scientist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's right. That I can understand that. Like, you already know.
Yeah.
But in that moment, when
it's not negative, but you're just not getting that moment again.
Yeah, so one of those things that's going to happen like that. But yeah, when you see it, it's like, oh. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So she's really diabolical, evil, everything. I very much enjoyed her performance.
Yeah, and we talked about Spider-Man Noir a little bit too, but I liked Uncle Aaron, Mahershala Ali. I also liked the Prowler character too. I thought that was a very cool character, one that I don't remember too much from my childhood.
Yeah.
So I thought that was like a very cool character to use. But the Uncle Aaron dynamic, as well as Jefferson, the father there, and seeing them kind of the dichotomy of two men kind of going in different directions, and they're still similar, but they're doing different things, you know? So I thought I really liked that. And the family aspect stuff I enjoyed.
I was familiar, like, somewhat with the character Prowler before this movie. That said, I did not know Prowler has been around since the 60s. Prowler's been around for a while. Took just a quick little Google there. That was surprising. Didn't know that. But yeah. He was very cool. Like, his everything about him. And again, like, so I knew that character was Prowler. So I didn't have that same shock that I think most people would have.
Yep. But
did you have that, like, when you first watched it?
I think I didn't know. I think that was a little bit of a surprise too, because I had no history of it, and I can't recall. It was like, it wasn't as big of a reveal or a surprise as Doc Ock with Catherine Hahn there, so mm-hmm. yeah, I don't remember it like I do that, but yeah, mm-hmm. That had to be the case.
Yeah, and the way like with Doc Ock's, with Catherine Hahn's Doc Ock, like, it's cool, but it's, and they do a good job with it. Like, we're talking about staying power with a reveal like that is difficult. Like, that is, it's not, you're naturally going to lose that. But they did it, and it's kind of quick the way it happens. You don't see mm-hmm. this character long. But then with Prowler, it's like, you've gotten to know, you've seen him around a little bit. You know Uncle Aaron and their relationship and everything. It's like, it just hits a lot deeper. So I feel like there is a little bit more staying power for how they do it. And it's also like, it's very fluid. Like, nothing is spoken when it comes to like revealing who it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that leads us into who lost the movie, and I have to say I'm a little surprised with the choice.
Well, I mean, he died.
So that's why I said a little surprised.
But yeah. Also, so like Uncle Aaron Prowler, like great performance, awesome stuff from Mahershala Ali. Loved the character in every sense. But not only did he die, like it was he didn't have a good relationship with his brother before he passed away. And what he found out, like who he found out the spider kid was that he was chasing, like mm-hmm. you could tell. I mean, he sacrificed himself. Like he knew something was going to happen. And he was just like, I'm out. I'm done. Like right in that moment, he felt so guilty and terrible. And it's just like, I don't remember feeling it so hard for him the first time around, but I definitely felt it for the guy this time around where he's like, fuck, man. I cannot believe this.
Yeah, it's too bad. And he had a pretty swanky life, pretty nice apartment. He had a great use of the subway system that he understood, so he could just kind of go in and around there. It's mm-hmm. good stuff. Mine was Penny Parker, I guess. Like again, kind of tough one, kind of coming up with here from my point of view. But this scare, from what I understand, it's like a Japanese kind of anime type of style, right? Character. Just not really for me. Probably past the time, you know, that character was probably released after I moved away from comic books and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I mean, of the spider people, she was definitely number 5 on my list.
Yeah, yeah, not for me. So, and you can't win them all. But who won the movie, Nick? Who won the movie?
I mean, it's between on screen and between Miles and Spider Gwen. But also, I think overall, it has to be the animation team because. Mm-hmm. They're doing this next Spider-Man movie, and there's supposed to be a third one, right? There's two. This one's a two-parter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they Beyond the Spider-Verse, I think that's what it's going to be called.
So they got a ton of no shortage of work right now. But after this, I would think this team, like in some capacity, would want to stick together because like they did such a good job, and they should be able to get more animation work because like not only do they do cool animation like with Miles and the characters who have the same animation style as him, but they bring in Spider-Ham, who has a different look to him. And then mm-hmm. like Penny Parker, same thing, has a different look to her, more anime style. And this was like, for me, I know anime is like, that's kind of like more like the not the peak, but like it's the height of animation right now. Mm-hmm. To me, this was the next step in animation.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm with you on that. That's great. And obviously the animation team goes big. Peter B. Parker, again, I think for all the 30-year-old schlubby fans of comic book movies, I think they all saw themselves a little bit inside of him. So I thought Gwen Stacy's Spider-Gwen was a great addition to be able to see her on screen, see her suit on screen. Very cool, even if it wasn't an animated version. And Sony overall, you know, Sony doesn't get very much credit, and rightfully so. But this was one of the things that they did really, really right, and
yeah,
really started them to go off and market the Spider-Verse, right? So, excuse me, you get Mobius now. You get all the other movies that are going to be coming out. I think they're going to be like Spider-Woman, right? They have all these rights to all these Spider characters that they're going to be put into use in some way, shape, or form now.
We'll see if they get any other of them right. They
true.
Like what is it? I would say like Venom right now has been kind of like a Mark Bellhorn, if you will, like where he like yeah, it's okay, but it's not that great. Like, but there are some like good moments, and mm-hmm. like, you obviously got to keep him in the lineup. And then this is like your man, your Mary's, your Big Poppy. But other than that, it's just like
who's
Mike Lansing's.
Like, oh, I was going to say maybe like Carlos Baerga.
Oh wow, was he an All Star? By the way, it's Morbius. He might have been, not Mobius.
Oh, say that they can't do that to me.
Yeah, no, I hate that. I absolutely hate that. Like, who? I don't know when that character got invented. Like, but Mobius, when you already have Morbius, it is a joke.
No, it's not. It's not good. It's not good. But you know what's not a joke, though, is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse here. Because this got a rock-solid 97 from Nick. A rock-solid 97 from me. That's a aggregate score, if I'm doing my math correct, for a CMM 97.
Ooh.
It's pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good. Let me carry the two here. Okay, we got it. Great. So, definitely go watch this movie ahead of Across the Spider-Verse, hitting theaters near you this weekend. So
very glad I did that.
Go check out Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. All right, let's switch gears over.
It's morphin' time.
To the discharge deep.
Choo choo, bitches.
So we both watched Love and Death. We finished it. What'd you think?
It was really. So you have finished episode 7.
Yeah.
I did not know that she got off.
Spoiler. Neither did I. I didn't look up anything. I know the wife did. And what I was shocked with, and this ended up getting cleared up, but I was like coming into it, I was like showering and thinking about the show. I was like excited to see the finale. And I was like, how did they not bring up the fact that she was pregnant? Because like they had established that she was pregnant again. Betty.
Betty had said that, kids. Yeah, and how did it not come up in the court case?
Right, as a double homicide. Like, you think that would have been played up by the prosecutors a little bit more. But then they end up saying at some point, whether it's said in the final title cards or someone brings it up, but that she wasn't pregnant. It was a false alarm.
Yeah, it was in the end, like the final like slide.
When they're like, where are they now type of thing. Yeah,
that. So that is a good point. It's interesting how they didn't even touch on it at all. But what I'm blown away is, so I think I've mentioned this already, but Hulu did something, and like this was like it was at some point I think last year that it came out, and Jessica Biel played Candy.
Yeah, and Jules told me that. Yeah.
Yes. So had Julia seen that one?
I don't think she saw it. No.
So I'm she wants to go watch it. She's her own woman. She's gonna do what she wants. But like Lauren watched that one previously, and after talking to her, like having heard a little bit about the other one, it doesn't hold a candle to the HBO one.
HBO does such a good job. Yeah,
of course. But like the difference is 3 episodes, but the way she was most blown away by coming out of it from like a comparative standpoint is how much the lawyer was like at the center of everything in this story. It's how he got her off. He should be. Like,
yeah.
How is he not? So like, I mean, I'm not saying don't go watch the Hulu one, but it just sounds like it's not even close to as good.
And the guy that they got to play the lawyer was awesome. He kind of jumped off the screen because he was chewing it, and him going back and forth with the judge was amazing. Like, I thought he was really good. But my big takeaway from this, and this, you can't do it, but you know, if Elizabeth Olsen was not Wanda Maximoff, Scarlet Witch in the MCU, she would make a great Sue Storm. As like a motherly older woman, like great kind of like family type of feel, you know, with Marvel's first family, but also very attractive, but in kind of like that wholesome 50s, 60s type of way that we saw in Wanda's WandaVision and then here as well. I think that would just be perfect. I don't know.
You know what, Wes? Like, that's a good point, and it makes me think now, like, but I think it's a good point.
She's great with Scarlet Witch, but
that was my gut reaction. Like, that's a good point, but like, I love how unhinged she's gotten in Scarlet Witch. But then that kind of just brings me to a more important point. She's just a great actress.
Period. Yeah, she's
like,
good.
When we talk about people who, if they're in something, I'm interested in it. I feel like Elizabeth Olsen is in that category for me. Like, I have to consider giving it a watch if she's in it.
Yeah, she did a really good job in Wind River that came out a while ago with Jeremy Renner, and then she's doing this. She's doing a good job of separating herself from the MCU and kind of being typecast and that sort of thing, and not being a Chris Evans, Captain America, Chris Hemsworth, Thor type synonymous thing. Sometimes that can be a good thing. Sometimes it can be a bad thing, right?
Yeah, I think for Hemsworth, it's been great. I think for her, it would honestly, we would be missing out if people just wanted to cast her in that kind of role. I'd love to see her play like unhinged again. Like she does it very well, but she should just take. I think she's the type of actress who can just take the roles that she wants to take, and that's it. She is that good.
What is Within?
So Within is it's a movie that stars, Aaron Moriarty, Starfire.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So but Lauren had wanted to watch it, had been on her radar. Now, this movie has like, we talk about like bad grades. This is like a 28% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, man. What's this on?
Shit. I think it was HBO. Okay. But it's a scary movie. And it's a fucking scary movie. Like, like if you have problem with like home invasion, like related stuff.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Don't watch it. And it's next level with that. I understand. Like, I'm not saying this should go out and be like, get this great score. Like 70 would probably make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like 60s would make sense too, but 28, I'm like, no. Like the parents, their acting is bad. Their writing is a little clunky too. But mm-hmm. like the main antagonist is very interesting. The way this like the cinematography in it is like was something that Lauren was harping on, and I agree. Like the shot, and it's like that's the stuff that sticks with you. Like with this movie, mm-hmm. photography, like the fucking scares, man, are brutal. And then Erin Moriarty, she does a great job. Like she is good, period. Like the premise is good, the cinematography is good, the antagonist is fucking terrifying, and then Erin Moriarty is good. Like to me, I don't know, like it's you want to just take it all because the parents suck, and then maybe one other character who was kind of prominent in the story was eh. Like you're gonna give that a 28? I don't think that's
fair. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Barking back at the critics. I love that. There. Go. Check out Within. While everyone was watching Succession, the series finale last night, I watched the series finale of Barry and the season finale of season 4. Kind of a weird season. Kind of a weird ending. You know, I wasn't crazy about this season. I didn't really like. I thought Barry finally became unlikable. I'm not sure if that was done by design, but I didn't really like him very much at the end of this. I didn't really like Gene Cousineau and how it all ended. It was just very interesting. So I want to hear if he's like doing any podcasts or interviews about this as it wrapped up to see kind of get into his head of what he was thinking now that it can all be spoiled and talked about. So, but yeah, it was a little disappointing way to end it.
Are we trying to get him on? Is that what it is?
Yeah. I want to see his availability. Can you check that for me?
Yeah. God, I gotta
book Bill Hader for next week. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. Okay. I'll get on that. but so what do you give? This may be a tough question to put you on the spot with, but from a grade standpoint, do you have one for all of Barry or do you have one for season 4 of Barry?
Definitely watch. It's a watch. You know, you should definitely watch Barry, the series. I think it's great. It gets, you know, it has strong staying power through the first 3 seasons, but this one was a drop off. And then I don't know. I would have to think about it to do a ranking, you know,
okay.
of the seasons, but this is, The season 4, maybe high 70s, low 80s, and then overall a high 80.
Okay. Could you watch the first 3 seasons and then just not watch season 4 and it be fine?
No, you kind of want to see where it goes, and that's kind of the problem. Because they do such a good job of leaving you like, how's he going to get out of this next? And then the problem is that this is the first season where he's like, he's not getting out of it. You know, they're ending it.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I've never, I have not given this a second of a look. Maybe this is something that will, now that it's all kind of done, maybe we'll, and this is HBO. Yeah. So,
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And probably one of the more unlikable, women characters, like Pant, in Sally Reed, I think is the character's name. The actress does a really great job of portraying her, but I think she's supposed to be unlikable. And it's just very, very unlikable here. Ooh. Like almost like who's it, Skyler from Breaking Bad, where like she just like is a foil to all of the plans and just kind of like an overall bad time.
I just made
kind of like that.
You just made me think, like, who are some of the characters that are most universally hated?
Hey, that everybody? Could be an episode. That could that be a could... podcast there. We just jot that down.
That'd be a tough one though.
Hate.
Double hate.
Yeah.
Loathe entirely.
The by player the way, haters ball. That would be a good sounder for that. We could get a lot of good sound for that.
Wait, that's what you were quoting? I was quoting the Grinch.
No, you could do both. Yeah. The Chappelle Show player haters ball. Loathe entirely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I forget. Do you like the Jim Carrey Grinch or
no? But my wife says, my wife loves it. And she says that line all the time. Hate, loathe entirely. She says it all the time. Yeah.
Okay. I am curious. Ask her if she can figure out who is loathe entirely, because I am pretty sure I know who it is. Like you don't say the name, but he does it alphabetically. Right.
So who is it?
It's the mayor.
Oh,
because his name
that's
is
right.
Augustus Mayhew, so it's like hate, double hate, and he's in the A's, so it's got loathe entirely. It's got to be him, right?
Yeah, and that was his childhood bully and all that. Yeah. Okay, I like that. Good debunking there, huh?
See if she can figure that out.
YouTube channel. All right, that'll be a good trivia question at dinner. What do we got this week in the DSG?
All righty. So hashtag Dork is doing season 2 of Yellow Jackets. This is another show that I'm interested in giving a look. But I think this is a Showtime show.
Maybe. Maybe it's Apple TV. Yeah. It's an atypical streaming service.
Yeah. But I think you can, I don't think it's Apple, but I think it's one where you can like watch it on Amazon through this or, you know, somewhere else. So
okay.
I want to watch it, but I feel like I might have to wait so I can watch it all at once because I don't necessarily want to pay extra for the service. But anyways,
right.
They love that show. Mac and Goo did a best duos fantasy draft.
Interesting. That was a good listen.
PCP. Oh, I haven't. You liked that. I haven't given
it. Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah.
Okay.
It's your 600th episode.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
That makes sense why they did the best duos. Okay. And I was wondering, like, what is relevant to that? Okay. Did either one of them draft each other?
No, I don't think so. I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to spoil it. But, okay. You have to listen.
Okay. I won't ask any more questions then. PCP, they are continuing their third iteration of their protest. TLDR, we are doing What's New This Week. Maybe something else, but you have to subscribe to the audio channels to check that out. I've heard it both ways. Season 6, Episode 2 of Psych This Week. Streamers, you can find Doc at Backcracker on Twitch, Shime at Shimetime on Twitch, and then Dork does their video game playing over on the hashtag Dork YouTube page.
All right, so after doing Into the Spider-Verse this week, next week we are doing Across the Spider-Verse. Very excited to see that. Oscar Isaac's debut Into the Spider-Verse with Spider-Man 2099. Can't wait. This is a fun stretch to be an entertainment podcaster.
Yes, sir. Yes, it is. I snuck up on us real quick. I'm ready for it now. Oh boy. Okay, so
snuck up on us. This guy usually does. He's a sneaky SOB, but we'll be back next time, same bad places.